Hebrews chapter 12. We looked last week at Hebrews chapter 13 and looked at the end of the chapter and talked a little bit about Paul's admonition there. And we keyed on verse 20 of chapter 13 on the God of peace and what the God of peace does for us as the things that ought to challenge us. That God of peace, that's, I want to tell you, that's a great comfort. Knowing that the God of peace is going with him. We talked a little bit about that last Sunday morning and Sunday night, about the God of peace and our job responsibilities there. I want to look in Hebrews chapter 12. As we said last week, Hebrews chapter 11 is kind of the pinnacle or the keynote, if you will, the book of Hebrews. And it's a great chapter to get encouragement from and strength from and direction from. Boy, there's so many principles, and we never preached just on that chapter. Recently received for Christmas, I guess you'd say, some of Adrian Rogers' notes and books. And I think he had, if I remember correctly, I think he had 15 messages out of Hebrews chapter 11. That's getting a lot of out of a chapter, and he could certainly do that. A great preacher of years gone by, and the world certainly misses him and his stand. So there's a lot in chapter 11, but in chapter 12, we'll begin notice reading in just a moment. There's also a challenge there given. I want to speak this evening on this idea of finish the drill. Finish the drill. You know, a lot of people start out in the Christian walk. And there's a lot of things that, especially the first of the year, the gym memberships are slam full. And everybody's starting a new diet. And we were speaking with someone yesterday, and they said, "Preacher, I'm starting a new diet." It's the first of the year, you know, when we start those things and all those New Year resolutions and that sort of thing. Well, tonight I want to look at this idea of finishing the drill. Paul understands, he's writing to a group of believers, and again, you got to understand the mindset. They were convinced, as much as we are convinced, that Jesus Christ must come back very soon. I don't know. I don't see how we can go another 10 years. Now, you can do what you want to. I just don't see how we can do it. And, of course, I know the Apostle Paul felt that way. And certainly there are many who've thought that same thing before. You say, "Preacher, what do you accredit that to?" All I can say is God's long-suffering and grace and mercy. That's all I can credit it to. When he comes back will be his decision. But we read Hebrews chapter 11 and chapter 12, and Paul is writing to encourage a group of people, by the way, who are going through a great deal of suffering. And I think that is something that is coming to our shores and coming to our shores quickly. If you follow, there's a group entitled Voice of the Martyrs, and I encourage you to go online and check that their organization out, Voice of the Martyrs, and it gives a vivid description of martyrdom in our day. It's far more common than you and I would ever imagine. And there's so many being persecuted for their faith. I believe that's coming to our shores as well. Matter of fact, I read an article last week where a man, a 79-year-old pastor, if I remember correctly, I believe it's in Belgium, a 79-year-old pastor has been put in jail for 6 months for preaching against Islam. He preached that it was a violent religion. I agree with the word violent. I'm not sure it's a religion. They're worshiping it as a religion, but he was certainly speaking of the truth. And now a 79-year-old pastor in Belgium has been put in jail. And that, again, I believe is coming to our country as well. So Paul is encouraging a group of people who are facing some opposition. And they know what it's like to live for God in the face of opposition and in the face of adversity. I'm not sure we know that. I'm not sure we can fully appreciate the book of Hebrews, and especially the book of James, when these men and women dealt with such great persecution. But Paul has given us a great challenge. Notice in chapter 12, if you would stand with us, please, out of reverence for the word of God. We'll read just a few verses and look at Hebrews chapter 12. And this idea of finish the drill. Finish the drill. Some of you know that the national championship football game is tomorrow night. And we are going to, somebody said, "You're having a men's meeting?" I said, "Yeah, we're going to do what men do, watch football." And we're not going to watch football tomorrow night during the meeting. Shortly after the meeting, we're going to. But one of the teams that is playing, of course, is Alabama and Nick Saban. His theme all over the locker rooms and where you go is this theme: finish the drill. Finish the drill. It's not how well you start. It's how well you finish. And so I want to look at this thought this morning, this evening, rather, finish the drill. Look in verse 1. He said, wherefore, and again, of course, wherefore is referring to back to chapter 11, what he's been talking about. See what it's there for. Wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. And that's where we get the idea of finishing the drill. Man, don't get sidetracked. Don't get discouraged. Don't get off course. He said, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. For consider him that endured such contradiction of sinners against himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds. Ye have not yet resisted unto blood, striving against sin. And ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children, my son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. Now notice he said, ye have forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. What exhortation is he talking about? Who gave the exhortation? Anybody know? Verse 5 is an exhortation. He said, you've forgotten exhortation. So somebody besides Paul had given the exhortation. It was Solomon in the book of Proverbs. Solomon in the book of Proverbs says, my son, despise not the chastening of the Lord. And so Paul is reminding them, you've heard this before. This is not new stuff, Paul is saying. He said, you've forgotten the exhortation which speaketh unto you as unto children. My son, despise not thou the chastening of the Lord, nor faint when thou art rebuked of him. That is the words of Solomon. For whom the Lord loveth, he chasteneth, and scourges every son whom he receiveth. If you endure chastening, God deal with you as sons. For what son is he whom the Father chasteneth not? But if you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then are you bastards and not sons. Furthermore, we have had fathers of our flesh which corrected us and gave them and we gave them reverence. Shall we not much rather be in subjection unto the Father of spirits and live? For they verily for a few days chastened us after their own pleasure, but he for our profit, that we might be partakers of his holiness. Now no chastening for the present seemeth to be joyous, but grievous. Nevertheless, afterward it yieldeth a peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. Heavenly Father, pray help us this evening. Lord, as the Apostle Paul challenged us, especially in the first couple of verses, to finish the drill, to run the race with patience, to finish our course. Paul could say honestly and say confidently, I have finished my course. Lord, everybody's course is not the same. Lord, you've set before us a course. Every individual, every child of God has a course. Lord, help us to run with patience, with perseverance, the race that is set before us. Lord, may we look unto you, the author and the finisher of our faith. And Lord, I pray you'd help us, challenge us this evening. Lord, we speak to a group of people tonight and we don't know all the burdens that they carry. We don't know all the obstacles that they face. We don't know all the challenges that they deal with on a daily basis. Lord, but we do know, as the Apostle Paul wrote, that oftentimes, if we're not careful, we'll get wearied in our minds. We'll get discouraged. We'll get disheartened. And we're tempted to faint. So, Lord, I pray you'd help us tonight to challenge us to keep going for you and to finish the drill, finish the course you've given us to do. In Christ's name we pray. Amen. Thank you. You may be seated. I want to give you four things very quickly. Now, we may not get to all four. We may just get to three. But I'll look at a few things tonight in this chapter and speak on this idea, finish the drill. Finish the drill. Notice in verse 1, he said, wherefore, seeing we also are compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us, and let us run with patience the race that is set before us. So I want you to notice, number 1, the command. The command that is given. He tells us twice in verse 1, let us, and he gives an action verb. Let us in verse 1, he said, let us lay aside, and then let us run. And he mentions in verse 1, he said, seeing, wherefore, seeing we're also compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. Who are those witnesses? Well, there's two schools of thought there. There are some that believe that the cloud of witnesses are those that have gone before. Speaking of those individuals in chapter 11 that Paul has mentioned, and there's a long list, and there's many who are unnamed. And so some believe that it's talking about those who've gone before us, those who are in heaven. Can those who are in heaven see what's going on down here? I don't know. Some believe they can, some believe they can't. Some people subscribe to the idea that Paul is speaking about the saints in chapter 11, and he says those are a great cloud of witnesses that are before us, are watching us. Some say that that is not the case. Some believe that when he says about a great cloud of witnesses, he's talking about a testimony. He said, notice verse 12, wherefore we seen also we're compassed about with so great a cloud of witnesses. In other words, we're compassed about, we're surrounded with a number of testimonies that it can be done. And so there's two schools of thought there. I'll let you choose which one you believe. I've got reasons why both of them, why it could be either one, reason why it can't be either one. So I'll let you sort that out in your own heart and mind, all right? So it could either be a group of people, those that are gone before, those in heaven. Some say they're watching us. Others say it's not the ones in heaven, but it's rather it's a witness, a testimony of those for us. And so either way, he tells us in verse 1 there's a command. Those two commands that are given here. First of all, another one, he said run. That running involves a purging. Notice in verse 1, he said, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily beset us. Now, I said, if we're going to run the race, first of all, there's got to be a purging. He said, let us lay aside some things. There are things that, he said, first of all, let us lay aside the weights. No runner is going to run with a weight strapped to his back. Now, in training, they will run with those weights, and those weights will burden them down and weigh them down. But when they get ready to run the race, man, they're going to strip everything they can because they want to be as light as possible. They don't want anything to hinder them from running the race. And so what is it in the Christian life that often hinders us? Adrian Rogers once said that good things are bad things when they keep you from the best things. Good things are bad things when they keep you from the best things. There are some things that are not bad in and of themselves, but they become a bad thing when it keeps you from the best thing. Is there anything wrong with sports? No, there's not. But if sports keeps you from church, then it's a bad thing. Sports is a good thing, but it keeps you from the house of God during revival or Wednesday night service. It's a bad thing. So good things can become bad things if they keep you from the best things. It may not be illegal. It may not be immoral. It may not even be fattening. But it's a hindrance. It's a weight. It's something that will burn you down and hold you back. And so what is it tonight in our life that causes us not to run with the race as best we can? Back in those days, they had the Olympic Games. They had the Pantheon Games. And they had the Isthmian Games. And those games were scattered throughout the year. They were not at the same time. They were scattered so that the elite, the wealthy, could attend those games. And we are impressed by the stadiums and the domes of our day. But I want to tell you, for that day, they were very advanced. It was not a stadium like we would have. They said the average stadium that would hold an Olympic game or a Pantheon game was at least 6 football fields long and just as high as any stadium we would have today. And that was a thing of the day. Matter of fact, the athletes in that day were more honored than were the military men of that day. Boy, it sounds a lot like today, doesn't it? It's sad that men will go to battle and fight for our country and fight for our freedom, and they come back and they're laughed at and spit upon and ridiculed and belittled. And yet a guy can carry a biscuit down a ball field and we celebrate it. And that's the way they were. Their priorities were just as out of skew in that day as they are in our day. Now, listen, I love athletics. I love watching ball games. But I want to tell you, we honor those guys more than we do men who will fight for our country. There's something desperately wrong with our priorities. Greatly wrong. And yet, that was the case in that day. So Paul's appealing to what these people understood. And they would worship these athletes. They would make statues of them. They would have poems written about them. They would be honored. They would be lifted up and exalted in society just as they are today. So Paul is appealing to those believers. Look, as you see these people train for something that is temporal, Paul said we ought to be just as serious and train just as hard for that which is eternal. And so he said we've got to lay aside some things. Lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. Someone once said that we should learn to treat sin like sin would treat you. That's good. That's good philosophy. You ought to treat sin like sin's going to treat you. I have a question. Is sin going to be merciful to you? No, it's not. So we ought not be merciful to sin. You see, it's not just something that we'd probably do, but I'm talking about not. There's some weights and then there's some sin. And Paul said in verse 1, he said, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. That sin that we easily trip over, that sin that easily sets us back, that sin that easily would get us off course. And you know every individual is different, and so every life is different, so every sin is different. And Paul said, take those things that would easily sidetrack you, those things that would easily disqualify you, lay them aside. And so if we're going to finish the drill, first of all, there's some purging that has to be done. If you're going to be a serious athlete and you're going to be serious about training, there's some things got to go out of the kitchen. There's some brownies got to go. There's some Coca-Colas that's got to go. There's some things that are not, they're not evil, they're not wicked, they're not immoral, they're not illegal, but they're not going to help you train. They're not going to help you be all that you need to be as far as being fit. There's some things that have got to be laid aside. If we're going to run the race, there's some things we've got to get rid of. There's some things we must lay aside. Let us lay aside the weight and the sin which does so easily beset us. So number one, there's a purging. There's a purging. Notice number two, there's the patience. Notice verse 1 again. He said, let us run with patience the race that is set before us. Now the word patience there is a unique word. It's not the idea of patience as the patience of a husband waiting in the shopping mall. That's not the kind of patience he's talking about. The kind of patience he's talking about here is bearing down with pressure. It's more of being pressed down. Paul talked about it in the book of 1 Corinthians. He said, I'm pressed down. Those things that he said, I've been pressed down, I've been pressured. And so let us run with pressure, or let us run with even bearing down under pressure. Someone has said what makes a boxer or an athlete better than another boxer athlete is one word, that is the word endurance. One of the strengths of a lot of football teams, one of them that is playing tomorrow night, their strength is their depth. In other words, they've got a lot of players that can come in after one crew runs out. They're very deep. They've got a lot of endurance. Can I say to you, what it takes for us in the Christian life to run the race is patience. Not just patience as far as waiting. It's not patience like waiting at a red light. It's not patience like waiting for something, an event to take place. It is patience with the idea of being willing to carry the load under the pressure. And by the way, these people understood what pressure was all about. Paul was writing to people who had seen their loved ones fed to the lions. They had seen church members burned at the stake. They understood what pressure was about. And Paul is speaking to them in chapter 12 and verse 1, and he said, let us run with patience, with pressure, with the bearing down of pressure. Let us run with that pressure, with that patience, the race that is set before us. And notice he said in verse 1, the race that is set before us. Everybody has their own race. I can't run your race. Your wife can't run your race. Your husband cannot run your race. Your parents cannot run your race. The youth pastor cannot run your race. You and I have a course that only you and I can finish. Let us run with patience a race that is set before us as individuals. So we see there's a purging. Number two, we see there's a patience. Then notice number three very quickly in verse two, we see there's a perspective. The command involves a purging. There's some things that have got to be let go of. Some things that have got to be laid aside. May not be evil, may not be illegal, immoral, but they're not helping us. They're not expedient. Paul said in 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 12, all things are lawful for me, but all things are not expedient. All things are lawful for me, but I will not be brought under the power of any. The word expedient there means to expedite or to help along the way. Now think about that word. The word expedite means to help you along the way. It means to help you move faster. Paul said, all things are lawful to me, but all things are not expedient. Not all things help me move faster. Not all things help me run the race. So what is it that in our life that helps us or hinders us from running the race? It slows us down. It drags us down. It might be a relationship. It might be a hobby. Nothing wrong with hobbies. Many of you remember Brother Mike Sheedy. And I remember Brother Mike Sheedy took up kayaking. And man, he enjoyed that. It was good exercise. And nothing wrong with riding it. I enjoy kayaking myself, and nothing wrong with it. But it became a god to him. I mean, every free moment he had. He was in that kayak. Sunday afternoon, man, he'd leave church, go kayak, and come back. So he'd be in church. They never took him out of church. Boy, it was a weight. And he confessed to the fact that he finally had to sell it and get rid of it. Why? He said it was a weight. It dragged me down. It didn't help me along the way. It didn't speed me along the way. And there's some things in life that are not wrong in themselves, but Paul said, I'll not be brought to the power of any. I enjoy playing golf. Not the way some people enjoy playing golf. Most of the places I play, they discriminate against me. They don't cut the grass where I play on the golf course, and there's too many trees in the way, and I'm liable to get, you know, an iron stuck in the tree, Brother Bert, and you've witnessed that before, and I'm not very good. I remember many years ago now, my brother-in-law we had some time at Christmas. He said, hey, let's go play some golf. And so we went and came back, and I said to my father, are you going to go play with us? He said, no, sir. Now my father-in-law was not, he loved baseball and boxing. That was it. Other than that, he didn't care for sports. He loved baseball and boxing. And so as far as I knew, those were the only two sports he'd ever played or cared anything about. And so I said to him, I said, you never played golf, had you? He said, oh, yeah. He said, matter of fact, I used to love to play. Well, it kind of surprised me. And I said, you used to play golf? He said, oh, yeah. I said, why don't you play anymore? He said, I threw my clubs away. Now, if you knew anything about my father-in-law, I mean, he would squeeze the head off a buffalo nickel. You talking about tight. That man was, I give some illustrations. I'm not going to do it tonight. I'm telling you, that man was tight. And for him to throw anything away, there had to be something wrong. I said, all right, I've got to hear, if you threw away golf clubs, I got to hear this story. Because, I mean, there's a story behind that, I can assure you. And I said, why in the world would you throw away? Because if it was something he was involved in, he was going to make it the best and do the best and get the best he could. I said, why in the world would you throw golf clubs away? He said, they control me. I said, say that again. He said, I got to the point where I felt like I had to play every day. And he said, one day I got in my truck, came back, and I thought, you know what? This is stupid. I'm letting a bag with a bunch of sticks in it control my life. He said, that's foolish. He said, I took them, threw them in the trash can. Now, again, for my father-in-law to throw anything of value away had to be a major event. You know what he was saying? There's some things you just ought not control you. And there's nothing wrong with golf. Golf is not a sin unless you play it the way I play it. Well, then it might be sinful. It's just plain bad. But golf is not sin. But if it controls us, then it's sinful. We can mention many other things. Paul said, I'll not be brought into the power of any. So there's a purge and there's a laying aside. Then there's patience. And then there's a perspective. Notice verse 2, if you would. He said, looking unto Jesus, the author and finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him, endured the cross, despising the shame, and is set down at the right hand of the throne of God. So number 3, there's a perspective. In the command, he commands us to purge. He commands us to be patient. He commands us to have the right perspective. Verse 2, looking unto Jesus, Greek there means looking only unto him until everything else is out of view. Now notice it doesn't say looking at Jesus. It's not what he said. Because you can look at something and still look at something else. Looking unto means everything else is out of view. Everything else is out of sight. And Paul tells us in verse 2, looking unto Jesus. He didn't say looking at Jesus. He said, looking unto Jesus. In other words, you turn your back on everything else and you look only at him. Verse 2 again, looking at Jesus, the author. And here it is, talking about finishing the drill, the finisher of our faith. And boy, that is so crucial. Understanding that Jesus is not just the beginning, but he's the end. What God starts, he will finish. Philippians chapter 1, verse 6, being confident of this very thing, that he which hath begun a good work in you will perform it until the day of Jesus Christ. Understand what God starts. He's the author and the finisher. Boy, that is so important to understand that finishing part. He's the author, he's the beginning, and he's the end. Looking unto Jesus, keeping our eyes upon him and only upon him, because he will complete, he will finish that which he starts. So often we maybe get involved in a new hobby or something that we think piques our interest, and we get involved in it, and we start it, and then it gets hard, it gets difficult. And what do? We push it to the side. There's men in here that have an old vehicle somewhere in the yard that you started tinkering with, and it got hard, got difficult, got to be too much trouble, so you pushed it aside. No doubt there's some ladies in here. You had some kind of project that you started. It might have been art, or it might have been something else, and it might have been restoring some furniture or whatever. And you started on it, boys, all excited, and then it got difficult. It got hard, and it got cumbersome. And so it's in a back room somewhere with a blanket over it, and we don't talk about those things. Well, let's just be honest that there's times when we start things and we never. I want to tell you, God never starts something that He does not finish. God has started something in your life. I'm going to tell you, He's going to finish it. Now, sometimes the process is long. And sometimes we become impatient. Sometimes we don't see all that He's doing. Sometimes we don't understand the curing process. Some of you who you understand that curing process, and especially in woodwork and different things, there's a curing process. And a lot of times in preserving food, there's a preserving or it's a curing process. And that time can be laborious, and it can be boring, and it can be difficult. But I'll tell you, God never starts something that He does not finish. So Paul is reminding those Hebrews to look unto Jesus. He's the author and the finisher of our faith. What God has started in us, He is going to finish. Look unto Him. Number one, there's a command. Number two, very quickly, in verse 3, there's a consideration. He said in verse 3, "For consider Him that endured such contradiction of sinners against Himself, lest you be wearied and faint in your minds." The word "consider" is a word that Paul often used in the book of Romans for the word "reckon." It means to get an account of. We have some folks in here that work in the accounting business. And you know all about accounting and figures and reckoning. And that's what Paul is talking about in verse 3. He said, "For consider," or to reckon Him, to give an account, to take account of, or to count the cost. Paul reminds us to consider Him. And boy, he says some things about Him in verse 3. "For consider Him that endured." Notice verse 2, we find that word "endure." "For the joy that was set before Him," verse 2, "He endured the cross." Again in verse 3, he said, "For consider Him that endured such contradictions of sinners against Himself." And notice, if we skip down to verse 7, "If ye endure chastening." God has given us, Christ is a living example for us. Many years ago, Brother Tim Fallor preached a message at a Baptist school retreat that we had out of verse 2. And I've never forgotten the message, never forgotten the principle. The title of the message was, "Before you can enjoy, you got to endure. Before you can enjoy, you must endure." Boy, there's some great principles in that, some great truth in that. There's a lot of things in life, before you can enjoy them, you've got to endure them. And the Bible said that Jesus endured the cross. And so He said in verse 3, "For consider Him that endured such contradiction of sinners against Himself, lest ye be wearied and faint in your minds." Can I say to you, we ought to look unto Him and we ought to consider Him, for He endured, therefore we need to endure. Well, Christians that have come and make a profession of faith and get out of church are a dime a dozen. They are all over the place. But thank God for faithful people that will endure. Is it always easy? No. Is it always popular? Certainly not. Is it always with great acclaim and great appreciation? Most certainly not. But Paul said, look, if we're going to finish the drill, he said, we must look unto Jesus and then we consider Him. Take account of Him and reckon Him, because He's started, He's the author and the finisher. He has finished the course, and so therefore we ought to finish the course. Consider Him who have endured such contradiction of sinners against yourself, yet should be wearied and faint in your minds. So number one, there's command. Number two, there's a consideration. I want to close there tonight because we won't have time to finish the rest of it. We may do that at a later time. In verse 4 and 5, he talks about there's a condemnation. Said, "You've not yet resisted the blood, yet striving to get sin." Verse 6 down to verse 12, God deals about correction. And unfortunately, that's part of the process. As our earthly children have to be corrected from time to time. And spiritually speaking, we have to be corrected from time to time. But Paul challenges us. And Paul said, because of the testimonies, because of the witnesses that are before us, a cloud of witnesses, be that the testimonies that are given in chapter 11, or whether they be actual witnesses in heaven, we don't really know. You can, again, you can judge for yourself which one he's talking about. But at either rate, Paul said, look, because of these witnesses, let us lay aside every weight. There's some things we've got to purge. There's some things we must be patient with. We must have the right perspective, looking unto Jesus. I encourage you, don't look at society. I don't watch the news a lot. I get too discouraged. And I know some people who live watching Fox News, and you listen to 5 minutes of their preaching and you know it. Because I think that's where they get all the sermons from. I'm not listening to the news. Don't look at other people. They'll discourage you. They'll disappoint you. You look at people, I'm going to tell you, they're going to fail you. Don't look at other people. Don't get discouraged and don't get disappointed. Don't look at other people. Don't look at yourself. I know some people that are always judging, always critiquing themselves. You know, that does need to be done, but they're so introspective that they don't get anything done for Christ. They don't launch ahead. They don't make any strides, any progress in the work of God. They're always examining themselves. We all examine ourselves. That is true. But some people, they consume themselves with just examining themselves, and they never get anything done. So don't keep your eyes on yourself. Don't keep your eyes on a preacher or some other person. Don't get your eyes on the world. Keep your eyes upon Him. Looking unto and looking only unto Jesus, the author and the finisher of our faith, who for the joy that was set before Him endured the cross. We have a great race to run. I'm not going to give an account for your race, and you're not going to give an account for my race. But one day we'll all stand before Him. And I hope we can all say with the Apostle Paul, I've finished my course. I've kept the faith. May I say to you, in 2016, it's a long year ahead of us. May I encourage you, finish the drill. Keep your eyes on the goal. Keep your eyes upon Christ. Lay aside those things that would hinder you. Don't let the good thing be the enemy of keeping you from the best thing. Keep your eyes upon Him. Finish the drill. Finish the course. And get God's blessings.